This is The Thirsty Developer, episode number 40, for Monday, November 10th, 2008. Getting ready for IE8. In this week's episode, Larry sits down at the PDC with a couple of folks from the IE8 team. They talk about how developers and IT pros can get ready for the new platform. Let's listen in. Hi, this is Larry Clarkin, and we're recording this podcast on location at Microsoft's Professional Developer Conference in Los Angeles. I want to welcome my two guests. Both of them are named Matt. Matt, can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Matt Hester. I'm an IT pro evangelist with Microsoft. I'm here at PDC. No, I didn't get lost. I am an IT pro here at a developer conference.
And Matt?
I'm Matt Heller, and I actually work out of Redmond with the product team, doing a cross-section of product marketing for developers, IT pros, security community, and a little bit of consumer in there as well.
So this podcast is actually called The Thirsty Developer, but we're going to talk a little bit about the infrastructure and the ins and outs of an upcoming release. We're here to talk about IE8, and you guys are actually, the people on the podcast can't see it, but you guys are, have gotten some nice IE8 shirts.
Our pretty white shirts.
Yeah, and IE8's a pretty significant, release for Microsoft, yeah. Right? It's, the first major update in a couple of years. It's also one that's...
Matt Heller, it's not been that long, actually. We released IE7 back in 2005 at Mix when Bill announced it. We said we're going to have a new release every 18 to 24 months. We are now coming up on 24 months from IE7's general availability release, and we're at beta 2 on IE8. So we're well within our release time.
Oh yeah, I said a couple of years, meaning literally the 2 years. So
just want to be clear, everyone knows. Yeah,
and it's actually that's one of the things that it's kind of interesting because we went for a long time without a major update to IE. Yeah. And, it needed some freshening up, and 7 went a long way with that. But so we could tell the audience, what are some of the big things that have changed in IE8?
Sure.
We could talk about the developer stuff separately and all that, but what are the big infrastructure changes? What are the big security changes?
Well, really, when I think about what are the big changes in IE8, there's really four that I think of. First off is that we are a standards-based browser now. So we render using the W3C standards, the same standards that govern all the other browsers, mostly, Firefox, Mozilla, Opera, Safari, all those guys out there, we're going to render on the same standards. And really, you think about that, that's an important problem we're trying to solve for developers. Developers have to design two websites today, one for Internet Explorer and one for everybody else. With IE8, we're going to change that game, and they're going to be able to design that page for web standards defined by the W3C, and we're going to be able to do that. So that's probably one of the biggest, most significant changes that we put inside of Internet Explorer 8.
And that's a real commitment that the product team started with IE7. They made some huge leaps forward.
Yeah.
But they said that going forward, we're going to be as standards compliant as possible.
And I think I really look at when they look at the kind of the shift, they are really embracing the standards here, and they're even defining some of the standards or help define some of the things around HTML5 and some of the other web development standards that are coming along, especially around the cascading style sheets. That we're really doing some work to help be a part of that community as much as embracing and using those standards to help define it. So compatibility and that the web standards mode that there is actually probably one of the things that we really, really are focused on probably from the IE product, from the biggest one. The second one that users will see, and then even just your regular enterprise business will see, are the abilities for faster and easier use. We use a tagline to reach beyond the page. But really, it's a tagline that is much more about how do you find the things that you like to use and do every day? How do you keep your customers involved with your websites every day? With things like accelerators and web slices, we offer ways that people can tie to the web services they use on the web every day of the week. Think about the simple example of you're looking for an address for a restaurant. Like, we're here in L.A. I'm not from L.A. I want to go to a restaurant. Well, how do I find that restaurant? Well, you do a search in whatever search engine you have. So, like, where are you going to, go to, like, Roy's in L.A.?
We went to Roy's the other night, yeah.
So you type in the Roy's L.A., and in your search results, you generally get a restaurant listing with an address. Or I don't care if you use, Live Search or Yahoo or Google. They all have this. What we can do inside of IE8 is highlight that address, and you get an icon. It looks like a little smart tag, and I kind of call it the smart tag for the browser. But what it is is an actual accelerator that allow me to click on it and say, map this with live maps. I know I selected an address, so I make that logical decision that, say, I select an address, and it's going to show up right inside my results window of map of where that restaurant is. And then if I want to go to the mapping service, I simply click on the picture, and away I go, and I interact with that service the way I always do.
It's very context aware of what you were doing.
Yeah, because we actually define that context by what we highlight and select. So there's accelerators for translation. There's accelerators for searching products on eBay. If you do a search and, oh, I want to go buy that on eBay, how much does that cost? You can do those types of things. And really it's designed about making your life faster and easier. And those are just two of the big ones with accelerators and web slices and how we work with that.
And the problem you're addressing here is what I like to call the copy, file, new tab, web address, paste, get the result. I mean, that's how, yep, I translate a text now. If I stumble on a page that's got a quote in German, you know, I open a new tab, I go over to, you know, the dictionary.com, do the German to English translation, I paste it from the previous page, and I get my results, and I go, oh, that's what that means.
Yeah, now you can do it all contextually within the same page. You know, and I'll do you one better. My dad's the perfect user from a computer. He doesn't ask a lot of questions, just goes about his business, but I watched him do this one day. He actually did a search, found a restaurant, looked at the address, he pulled out a paper map from his desk drawer to find out where the restaurant was.
Yeah.
So I had to do, there's a little bit of a disjoint there, but yeah, the exact kind of things. The other area that we did a lot of focusing on around security, around improving the browsing experience and making it safer for users. We did a lot of enhancements to the phishing filter, which is now called the smart screen filter, but we did a lot of things to prevent malware downloading. We're still working on the phishing website list to prevent people from going to those locations. But we also did some things that are really unprecedented in the browser around preventing cross-site scripting attacks. And really, Larry, when I think about a hacker attacking a website, cross-site scripting attacks are very scary to me because the hacker hasn't compromised the website, hasn't compromised the server. They've compromised a piece of code.
The application itself, yeah.
The application itself, and they're very hard to find. But what IE8 will do, it'll stumble upon one of these pages and say, oh, wait a second, there's script here that's cross-site. Maybe it's going to do a reflection attack. We're going to block that script. We're going to prevent that from running. So we're taking that browser security beyond the actual page that we have for inside of it. And the last area we have, and I'll pass it over to the other Matt here, is around the developer tools. So we did a lot of focus on that.
Matt Heller?
Yeah. One of the areas that we've spent a lot of time on is to try and enhance the whole developer experience, as Matt was talking about, with web standards and the ability to really build once and focus on your experience and not on the specialized coding that you need to do. But we also spent a lot of time to improve the overall developer tools experience. And when you're coding your site and things aren't laying out the way you want, things aren't working the way you want, we have the tools built into the browser now to give you an insight into what's going on there and see how that's working. We've delivered the developer toolbar as an additional add-on you can download as a browser helper object for years now, but we've now built it into the product itself, so it's always there, much more memory performant, much more resonant, and as soon as you close it, you actually free up all that memory, so you don't have to worry about the impact on performance on a daily basis. We've also enhanced it in two new ways by giving you a script debugger full with console.log support, and now you also have a script profiler, so you can actually see what IE is doing and how we are processing through the various scripts you have on a page.
Yeah, and this is a script debugger that's separate from the one that most of our listeners have already experienced with Visual Studio 2008. This is one that actually ships with the browser, so you don't necessarily have to have Visual Studio to debug into a JavaScript. It's right in the platform itself.
It's built into the browser, and so you can go to any machine anywhere. You don't have to worry about having a full suite of tools. I wouldn't go as far to say it's Visual Studio Lite, but it has the debug capabilities, and they're specifically tuned and targeted for Internet Explorer, and you're working within the model that Internet Explorer is actually using when it's parsing those pages and going through the scripts. So it's a much more exact view of how Internet Explorer is performing. So when you're going through, you really are getting a different kind of tool and different experience in itself.
Right, and the developer toolbar has been on my download list for years. That's like, you know, when I'm setting up a new machine or a new image, you know, to do development on, that was like one of the things that I had to download separately. Another great tool is Fiddler, you know.
Yep. Eric Lawrence is a security PM, actually the security PM for the Internet Explorer team, and he built Fiddler. We do a lot of work with Fiddler on the IE team, obviously, but internally and externally, we push that tool a lot. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's also a great tool for not just traditional web application development, but if you're dealing with web services, it's phenomenal so that you can, and we're a little off topic, but that's okay.
It's a great tool. It's worth going off topic for.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about, some of the other enhancements in IE. One of the ones, and I'm not sure who I'll target this at, that I've really noticed in the beta 1 and beta 2 was the address bar and how it highlights the domain.
Sure.
And I'm wondering if that is a feature of the finished product, because I love it, because I'm kind of a security nut. I think about phishing attacks and all that all the time. And one of the first things I always do is when I land on a new site, I always glance up at the URL because I want to know what domain I'm on. Am I on, PayPal.myspoofsite.com, or am I on PayPal.com?
Yeah.
And IE8, the address bar, it's so great. It makes it really easy to spot the domain.
Domain name highlighting, as you point out, it's a feature specifically targeted at an anti-phishing approach. So we do enable it. Just to clarify, in case there's any concern about it, with the release of Beta 2, we are feature complete. So what you see now is what's in the product. We're doing bug fixes and performance tuning, but this is the product. So that is how it's going to be. And we felt very strongly that we have to do the domain highlighting because while you're an educated reader and user, and the folks like Matt's dad who's going to pull out that map may not know what he's looking at, and so he might be just looking for PayPal.com, which is somewhere in that middle of that address.
Right.
Domain highlighting, which is going to highlight the top level and second level domains for the given URL, is going to really show him where he is and help give him that insight.
And we'll follow
that up obviously with the smart screen filter, so added layers of protection.
And that's a defense in depth in our approach. I was going to say that most of the time when I've landed on a phishing site, in IE7, it's been out there for a few days, and the bar is highlighted red, and that's still that's a new feature. It's been enhanced in IE8. I always like that because I would when I get a phishing email, it's obvious to me as a sophisticated security user. It's not necessarily obvious to somebody else, but it's something that really kind of pops.
Yeah,
Matt?
And they really did some great things in making that security pop. I mean, the cross-site filtering, a little bar pops up. But specifically about the phishing filter, if anybody's ever run into this phishing filter in prior versions of IE, it looked like a cert error. It looked like there was a legitimate problem with that site and not just a phishing site.
It could easily be confused with a cert error. Yeah,
it looked just a small white box. Now when they come into it, our buddy Craig likes to call it a teachable moment. It's a bright red screen, bright red address bar, big bold lettering says, don't go there. It's, if you had Robbie the Robot, running around going, warning, Will Robinson, there'd be that kind of stuff that we have, that we actually prevent that kind of thing. We really wanted the users to know, hey, you're probably going to some place you shouldn't be going. We're trying to make it very apparent that they're at some place bad.
Yeah. And internet security is everybody's job, especially the developer who's writing the code, the listeners of this podcast.
I actually wanted to jump on that because it's as you point out right there with the fact that this really is for developers that are listening. We have security features built in at a platform level as well, things like cross-domain request and cross-document messaging, which are new approaches to ensuring that you can do very sort of Web 2.0 type of applications in a secure manner, and you can put some authentication and validation checks behind your cross-communications there. And those are things that don't exist today. So users aren't going to see that. You're going to enable your applications, but you're going to be able to enable Web 2.0 applications as a developer using a new security level and mechanism that really doesn't exist anywhere else in other browsers today.
And that's a good transition to the next question I wanted to ask, which is, two different audiences. Matt Heller, I think you're representing the developers. Matt Hester is representing, more of the IT pros. How do we get ready for this? And we'll ask what an IT pro is in a minute. But, so if I'm a developer...
Are there IT amateurs if there are IT pros? Sorry.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and talk about that. So an IT pro is the guy that holds the key to the server. As a developer, it's the guy that you have to be buddies with. You take him out for a drink because, he's the guy that runs the infrastructure, not just the Windows Server necessarily, but a lot of them are responsible for the firewall configuration, the load balancers. So Matt, quickly tell us what your definition of an IT pro is.
It's funny, and I'll kind of go back to a story that I always talk with Bill Steele, a good developer friend of mine in Cincinnati. is I always talk with him. I said, you know, without my servers that I maintain as an IT pro, and I think of the IT pro as a guy who maintains that background, that we're the guy that doesn't get a lot of credit. I think we're the lineman of, you know, of an IT environment, and the developers are the rock stars. You know, and I think about SQL as a great example. For me as an IT pro to set up a SQL server, not that hard of a thing, but you have an empty database. Without a developer to make that magic of software happen, you have just an empty database. So I kind of, that's how I think of it in my mentality. You know, linemen are the IT pros, although we're really good linemen. So we're like the left tackle because they get paid a lot of money. And then right. You have the developers and the quarterbacks that really make the thing sing. But the joke I always tell Bill is, you know, without my server, you'd have no place to put your code.
No, he'd run it on his laptop. I know Bill.
Yeah, and without my operating system, he'd have no place to put his code. And he always jokes with me, he says, without my code, you'd have no operating system. So I think it's one of those things that I've grown to come to, that we are all in different very aspects. If we don't work together, if we don't come in that environment, if I don't give them the server and the environment to help open the pipelines, he's not going to be able to run his code. He's going to spend 6 months, you know, writing his code. He's going to come to ask me to deploy it, and I'm going to go, ha, go away. I don't know what that code is. And that's where I've seen a lot of enhancements in the tools, even SQL, IE8, even the Visual Studio team products that are helping breaking down those barriers so that when products are ready to deploy, that they go into my function. And really, as an IT pro, my job is to help make sure that the developer knows what firewall ports they can use, what applications and servers in the back end, and give them permission to be successful without having to give them the entire keys to the entire shop to be successful.
Right. So how do IT pros get ready for IE8?
How do IT pros get IE8? Really, and it's the same, probably very similar thing we're going to tell developers, is download it and play with it. The most common misperception that people are going to say is that IE8 broke my website. And really, it's not. Because of the way we're rendering, we rewrote the rendering engine inside of IE8. It's really just rendering under a mode they're not used to. So what I tell people right now, beta 2, download it, try it. Run it against your internal websites and in your internal applications. And then work with your developers to make sure you understand what's happening with that level. You know, a lot of the questions we get today are, you know, hypothetical. What if this and what have you tried it yet? You got to download it, see what it does, and bounce across. And even here at Microsoft, we're kind of our own case study. I see the application reports of making sure that we're improving the experience for internal employees.
And Microsoft has a lot of websites.
Yes, we do.
Some controlled by our corp group, some microsites that are, you know, running all over the internet at all. We, you know, it's a big barrier for us, yep, too, to also do all that testing. Reminds me that I run a microsite for our group that I need to go check on. So
yeah.
note to self.
check the URL. And I think also when you look at it from a standpoint, from an IT pro perspective, make sure you're current on how to do group policies, because that's how we're going to manage IE8. Make sure you're current on how you can deploy IE8. The great thing that the product could do with IE8 is it's in a Windows update package.
Right.
So, you know, if you use WSUS to deploy or SMS or System Center, or if you just want to slipstream it, make sure you're aware of those technologies, because IE8 is going to give you that flexibility to deploy it in your infrastructure like any other update package that we have. So be ready for that kind of knowledge and make sure you're fresh on that. And that's how I would say.
And I know your audience is very familiar with group policy, but there might be some developers listening who've not been exposed to it. So real quick, you know, what's group policy and why is that such a good thing?
Okay, so group policy, if you're a developer out there and if you ever came into work one day and you had no icons on your desktop with a white background with white text, that means the IT pro was messing with you. And he probably used a group policy to help control your desktop. Group policy is a way that we can help configure and manage desktops across the enterprise. And by that way, that was a joke. You could have laughed.
The white desktop with the white background. Text,
yeah, because what it allows us to do is control configurations and settings on a user's desktop. So it helps us have a corporate standard of this is what the XYZ company's desktop looks like. And group policy helps me mandate that control inside of it. And with Internet Explorer, there's over 1,300 group policy options where we can control what the home page is, to what the security settings are set up of, to what toolbars you have. So you have the ability here to really control that deployment experience as well as that maintenance experience. So we make sure that the browser works the way it should work with inside of our context of our business.
Right. So if you got a trusted extranet, for example, that you want to give extra security privileges so it can run ActiveX controls,
yep,
you would put that into a trusted sites list and add them to, you know, the right security. There's a couple ways you could do it, but the nice thing about that is if you manage 2,000 desktops, you don't have to go visit 2,000 desktops or have your user do that.
Yeah, correct.
You do it centrally.
And what's great about it is it's done at logon. It's all a part of your Active Directory logon. It's who you are, or if your computer's a part of it. because we define policy at a computer level and a user level to actually control it. It's funny you mention it. I'll let Matt pass it over. But when you talk about ActiveX and IE, we do some great things around security on a per-user kind of level with ActiveX scripting and controlling.
Yeah, so today one of the changes we made in IE8 is to move the requirement of ActiveX installations to be as administrator. So ActiveX controls should now be and can now be designed in a per-user context. So you no longer need to write to HK local machine. You can actually write to the current user instead and be able to install things on a user-by-user basis, which has a lot of benefits from a security standpoint, but also from an enterprise environment standpoint as well. And we've made another slight change around ActiveX control security. We've always had the ability to site lock a control so that I can enforce that it's only good on specific URL
right.
Or specific URLs, plural. But now, by default, when you approve a control that you've never used before, you're going to approve it just for that one specific site. So you're slowly increasing what could be an attack surface as opposed to the previous approach where it was sort of all or nothing.
It was very binary. And you saw a lot of attacks last year of something that wasn't necessarily meant to be run inside of a browser, like a vulnerability in product X. I don't want to mention one by name, but I know one that was pretty nasty last year. You know, because IE8 could light it up, that you saw that exploited.
And actually in IE7, we introduced the pre-approved control list for that specific reason. And one of the reasons that, despite the number of controls that were potentially vulnerable since the release of IE7, we have had a dramatically lower security issue response kind of scenario because of the pre-approved list. So we're very happy with what that did for IE7, and now in IE8 we feel like we're even giving more granularity and control over that, so that somebody enables a control for a particular site, even a vulnerability in that control on another site that's trying to abuse it, you're still not going to be vulnerable by default.
Okay. So short of saying the exact same thing that Matt did a second ago, which is download it and test it against your sites, how do developers get ready for this? And I think that that's a valid thing. But also, once you've done the block and tackle stuff, using the football analogy again, of making sure your sites work, then you want to be able to take advantage of the platform. So what do you do there, Matt?
I mean, download and test is a perfect piece of this, because I would say that's your first step. But once you start testing, you really run into a fork in the road kind of question. Where we've tried to improve our overall Internet Explorer compatibility story with IE8, you have the ability to have multiple rendering modes. While we do display content as standards mode by default with IE8, we do have the IE7 rendering mode. So we are aware that not everybody can convert all their code and be ready day one. While you should be starting now as day one, even though we haven't released the product, we do want you to be getting your sites ready. If it means you don't have the resources to do it, we have the ability to inject meta tags or HTTP headers to force IE8 to use the IE7 mode of rendering and capability, so you don't have to make dramatic changes to your content. If you're doing new code and you're starting to develop things now is a good time to be really focused on the standards compatibility version and working about that. Matt had mentioned that we do have the group policy and the capability of zones, and you mentioned trusted sites. For domain joined machines in an enterprise environment, part of our compatibility story to help developers and IT pros to manage this, we keep compatibility view on by default in the intranet zone. So your line of business applications, your internal applications, really need less change today to deploy. You still want to be looking at them, want to be thinking about what to do, but we're not going to make it something you have to do today. You can do it on your own time schedule, but it's important to be looking at it today and figuring that out. We've got a lot of guidance around the compatibility story and using the meta tags and which meta tags are good for different things.
And it's important to note that meta tags are not a Microsoft thing. I mean, that's the HTML standard tag. This applies to no matter what your web hosting site is. It's a Linux box, PHP, doesn't matter. It's the meta tag is something you ought to consider if you don't have time to
absolutely. The meta tags as a convention are an HTML standard. The specific value pair that we're talking about is at this point unique to IE8 and its ability to take that meta tag value and read it. But its presence won't harm any other browsers or previous versions of IE, etc. And so it is important to get that in there. If you do, let's say you're a hosted environment, you could be using Apache, you could be using IIS, any of that. We have guidance on our site that's downloadable that have sample configurations for HTTP configs for any of those platforms. Any changes you make on the server setting, we want to make sure that you understand a meta tag on the page overrides that. So we have a lot of granularity of control so you can really play with things as you want to.
And do we have an easy URL that we can point people to those references?
As easy as msdn.com/IECompat.
IECompat.
IECompat. It's our compatibility center. It's got a lot of great resources around that.
And we'll put that in the show notes if anybody wants to go out to the website and check them out. You know, any parting thoughts for you guys? I wanted to thank you guys for your time, but any parting thoughts on IE8?
The biggest parting thought is, you know, download it, test it, play around with it. We are feature complete, but you know, now is the time. We're taking bug feedback. Help us understand where we need to go. We are not, while we're feature complete in the rendering engine, we're not 100% CSS 2.1 compliant yet. We will be when we release, but if you find issues of implementation, things that we haven't done, things that we haven't done right yet, we want that feedback today. This is the time to give it to us to make sure we get the product right the first time. So.
And can they give you that feedback through the Connect site?
Through the Connect site, through the IE team blog at blogs.msdn.com/IE. It's a great place we get feedback. We have monthly chats with the community. We have tons of different resources. The best place to go to find out where those resources are and keep up to date with the team is the IE team blog site. That's the way we communicate what's going on, where we're going to be, events, et cetera.
And that's the number one read blog on Microsoft's
Absolutely
site, as I understand
it.
Yeah. Matt, any other thoughts?
No, just echo again. Hey, download it and try it, folks. Give it a whirl. Let us know where we're doing good. Let us know where we're doing bad. I think you're going to look at it and play with it. Try some of those things, accelerators and web slices. When you download it, just don't download it and see if your website works. Go out and, you know, highlight an address. Go to a foreign website and translate it. See the power of how it can tie it all together and how fast a browsing experience can be.
Well, great. We'll let you guys get back to the booth. And thanks for being on the Thirsty Developer.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Thirsty Developer. This podcast is available on the Zune Marketplace and the iTunes Music Store. You can also find a link to the feed at thirstydeveloper.com. For general comments on the show or to suggest a topic, send an email to thirstydeveloper@live.com.